Light Sport Aircraft, just what is required to get them certified in the U.S. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into this Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guests today are Nate Oldham of Aerogyro Aviation, which is located at the Spanish Fork, Utah Airport, and is a company that has taken on several interesting challenges related to light sport aircraft. And Ed Downs, who works now, when he's not taking care of his alpacas, as a consultant to companies looking to get certification that they've met ASTM standards to become light sport aircraft. I want to welcome you guys both. Nate, let me start with you. First of all, we're almost neighbors, but we have to come to Oshkosh, Wisconsin, right, to find time to talk to each other. Welcome in and tell us a little bit about, first of all, the major announcement that you had at the press conference.
Okay, we actually had two announcements. The first one was we've imported a new light sport aircraft from Australia. The brand name is the Australian Lightwing, but the model itself is the Outback. It's a two-place light sport aircraft. It's a mixture of different composites with a steel frame that surrounds the passengers. A very safe, but brand new, exciting aircraft here in the U.S.
I have to ask you, because as you know, we were joking about balloons and confetti when you became the 100th LSA manufacturer. I have to ask this now anytime an LSA comes on the market. What is it about the Outback that makes it distinct from the pack?
It fits our vision as a company is the big thing. We want safe aircraft. We want to be able to supply light sport pilots with an opportunity to get trained in an area near them and also to be trained and fly in something that's safe. And the Outback fits that. You know, it has that frame that doesn't, you're not just relying on the composite body, but it's also very easy to fly. The manufacturer's been in building this type of craft for 20 years. Australia, actually, interestingly enough, has had a category like that fits this kind of the recreational light sport category for a lot more years than the U.S. And so this guy has a lot of experience. His name's Howard Hughes, funny enough,
yeah.
is the engineer. And so it was a perfect craft to kind of fit that part of our vision of a company.
And you said there was a second part to the announcement?
Yeah, the other part was that we also now represent the Sport Hornet. It's a tandem, kind of like a Challenger on steroids is what a lot of guys call it, but it's a very well-designed tandem aircraft, and it fits that training model as well at a very affordable price. You know, there's a $59,000 to $65,000 entry price, and there's also, it was announced today that we'll introduce a $49,000 light sport aircraft ready to fly at that price, and you can finance that for about $399 a month, so...
I'm going to spend a lot of time after our break with Ed talking about the regulatory side, but tell us, you mentioned the vision for your company. I've referred a couple people to your website, especially people in Utah, and it's not always clear to people coming in and looking at your company for the first time what that vision is.
Okay. You know, we represent three aircraft, and it could seem from the outsiders that would be a little bit scattered, like, where's your focus? What are you doing? But really, we want to offer an opportunity to all light sport and entry-level pilots that can fly something that's easy to fly and affordable and safe. And we've included a rotorcraft called the Sportcopter 2. It's a two-place gyroplane, which we hope will attract some of the rotorcraft guys. That it's my own personal opinion. I feel like they're left out. You know, we were joking about 100 light sport aircraft. Well, there's really no legally certified helicopters or rotorcraft. However, a light sport pilot could fly in this particular gyroplane, and we want to be that kind of a location. The other part of it is services. You know, like you said, if there's that many light sport aircraft, where, you know, why buy what? What should I buy, and why should I buy it? Well, the reason would be if we can provide you with training, if we can provide you with an examiner, if we can provide you with the information and knowledge you need as a light sport pilot, where can you fly, what can you do, you're going to buy my aircraft. You're going to come to my location, regardless of what, you know, I might be blue or I might be 6 inches taller than the next guy. You know, the standards are set.
Yeah.
That we're all the same speed, we carry about the same weight, we land about the same speed. So it's going to be the service is what's going to make the difference between one person or the other. And I also think, you know, everyone should come here. If your brother likes rotorcraft and you like airplane, come to my place. You know, we're small, We've got a couple of locations now. We just have a new dealer in Oregon and the Washington area, and he owns three FBOs. He's just starting up with this same program, and so we hope to ramp up. The Sport Hornets move into Oklahoma, where they'll have some great facilities and nice support from the state and the city, and we hope to get a training program there as well for light sport. And so being small, we understand that we're starting to see that that's what the demand recommends, service. You know, how do I take care of you? We get people that come in and they say, you know, okay, I'm ready to get my sport pilot rating. What can you do for me? You know, what do I buy? What can I do? And so as we expand and grow, we hope to meet that demand with a proper program with full-time CFIs that are there, you know, 5 days a week. So that if you came in, you know, so that you came in with multiple aircraft choices, so that you've got, you know, you're not just relying on one guy who comes in after work to get you your light sport rating, and the aircraft has a problem, and you're, you know, you just wasted a trip.
All right, talk about your location and how it figures into this vision. You're kind of out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, you're like 45 minutes south of Salt Lake City on I-15. But you got a great training place. If you want to do students on cross countries, there's a couple of great airports, you know, in that 18 to 20 mile range away. What else is in the area that makes it a good place to train people?
Obviously, I mean, you live there now. You know, it's a beautiful place. We've got a lot of lakes. We've got really cool mountains. There's an interesting point for training, and that would be what obstacles, you know, is there wind? Is there mountains? You know, what kind of training are you getting? If you always did all your training in Kansas on a perfect day, you're not going to be that great of a pilot in wind, and you're not going to be that great of a pilot in mountainous conditions. Well, that's the beautiful places to fly. And so in Utah, we've got all of those, you know, I'm not going to call them hazards, but I'm going to call them training benefits that are in that area. So it's beautiful, but we can train you in the mountains. We can train you over lakes. We can train you in the wind and do all that. But also, we feel like that there, you know, we want to be close to you would be the goal eventually. And so with an Oregon location, with an Oklahoma location, with a Utah location, we hope to maybe, you know, expand obviously to the west or the east coast, and, you know, Florida, we got to do something there for sure. But if you can come to that centrally located area in your area and get training, that's what's probably more important to us than, you know, being in Utah per se.
I have a brother who lives in Kansas. I think he'd debate that there ever is a perfect day in Kansas. Oh, okay. But we'll let that one go. I'm here with Nate Oldham of Air Gyro Aviation, and in a moment we'll talk with Ed Downs, who's a consultant for companies that are seeking to demonstrate they've met the ASTM standards and become LSAs. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
An easy flight is a safe flight. That's why L3 Avionics Systems designed the most advanced glass cockpit system available to be intuitive and easy to use. The SmartDeck integrated flight controls and display system shows you what you need to know when you need to know it. And with the new addition of the Ultimate Synthetic Vision, SmartDeck shows you even more. With SmartDeck, interaction between pilot and aircraft is fluid, and advanced technology puts you in control with an extra layer of safety. Fly SmartDeck to get the ultimate glass cockpit experience at AirVenture or visit smartdeck.com.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft headsets merge the most advanced technologies from the fields of hearing science, aviation communications, and performance audio into one streamlined design. Clarity Aloft has a noise-canceling microphone optimized for speech frequency in high-noise environments like cockpits. The low-profile headband is featherweight and comfortable. Hear the difference a Clarity Aloft headset can make on your very next flight. Find out how. Call us at 612-747-3197 or check us out on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here, talking with Nate Oldham of Air Gyro Aviation in Utah, and with Ed Downs, who is a consultant based in Oklahoma, who helps companies prepare for the ASTM LSA process. Ed, first of all, our listeners may be snapping their fingers, tapping their foreheads, saying, where do I know that name from? Tell us about a little bit about your background and your family history in aviation.
Sure. I've been a professional in aviation for about 50 years. And a lot of that time was spent in the experimental end of the industry. I was the president and owner of SkyStar Aircraft. That's the manufacturer of the Kit Fox. And I think there's a lot of friends out there that remember me from my Kit Fox days. I retired from that about 3 years ago and went into ranching. But in that, I'd had the opportunity to participate in developing the ASTM standards that are in use today. I have been contacted by folks and have been delighted to help assist them go through the certification process.
Now, I think that for the unschooled among us who aren't in the manufacturing industry, we think that LSA pretty much wiped out all the red tape and problems faced by a new manufacturer. Is that the case? He said jokingly.
Certainly not. Anyone who thinks that the so-called ASTM standards are an easy way out in certifying an airplane haven't read them. The fact of the matter is there are some elements of those standards that are actually tougher than FAR 23. Those of us who participated in the committees that created those standards, and it was a committee operation with an enormous variety of skills involved in the creation of the standards, kind of decided that maybe we could get it right. And I think to a very large extent we have. But it is not a simple process, but it is a doable process. In this case, you are in fact working with yourself and your own good conscience and the customer as a relationship, as opposed to having a relationship with a government agency like the FAA. And that makes a huge difference in terms of creativity and doability.
I've heard the compliance with ASTM standards enforcement referred to as kind of an honor system. And I've also heard that the Light Aircraft Manufacturers Association has an audit process that you can go through if you're a member. Tell us how that whole side of the LSA process works. What keeps these guys walking the line?
First of all, I absolutely agree. It is an honor system at this time. When an airplane is prepared and ready for certification or the inspection by a designated airworthiness representative from the FAA, the individual asking for that inspection has signed a statement of compliance that basically says, hey, we're good people, we did a good job, we're in compliance with the standards. And could an individual, in fact, sign that document and not truly have met all of the standards? Yeah, they could have. We believe that there's going to be several factors that will sort of keep folks honest. Obviously, the civil actions that will occur if, in fact, accidents occur, if people are harmed, and it is later discovered that, in fact, the documentation was not as it should have been and testing was not as it should have been. We live in a litigious society, and in this case, it's maybe a good thing because it keeps people honest. The other side of it is the FAA absolutely holds the right and reserves the right to come in and inspect an LSA manufacturer at any point in time. And I can assure you, if the FAA shows up at your door, you better have things in order. Finally, I think that the work that the Light Aircraft Manufacturers Association is doing in two ways. One, they've created a good inspection system that is quite thorough, and they are encouraging now through advertising consumers to ask manufacturers, have they been through this audit? In other words, do they have the stamp of approval? So it's a matter of marketplace forces that are going to help enforce the rules. The FAA is going to enforce the rules and the industry itself, because those of us who have met the standards do not want to compete with those who have not. And we know who they are.
What exactly do the standards cover? I know that there are material standards, you know, bolt hardness and stretch and all that kind of stuff. I know from my friends in the gyroplane side of things that there was an effort to develop consensus stability standards for the way these things handle in the air. What have LSA manufacturers demonstrated in order to claim that they are ASTM compliant? What are all the sides of that?
Well, basically, you're absolutely correct. There's a number of standards. The first standard that folks have to look at is sort of the goodness of the design itself. Is it strong? Does it fly good? Is it stable? And that particular standard is defined by the ASTM, is quite thorough and specific in its definitions of what it's looking for. Stability issues are a good example. The strength requirements are actually different than those required for FAR 23, and G-load requirements are higher. than what the FAA expects to see out of a FAR-23 type airplane. The demands, for example, if you're going to claim that your airplane is spinnable, are quite stringent in terms of how you demonstrate that. An individual has to fly the aircraft and or show evidence, and it can be evidence that is computer-generated evidence, that the aircraft does meet that particular standard. All of us who do the test flying maintain test cards, just as Boeing does. And therefore, an individual can go back in time and take a look at an airplane and actually see how it's performing and what issues might have developed as we go through our flight test scenarios. We determine the weight and balance, center of gravity envelopes, the size, and what the limitations are in the airplane. So the standard is actually quite specific in terms of what needs to be documented and proved.
What about in terms of design? Somebody decides that where two parts turn, they're going to grease a bolt and put it through an aluminum hole instead of a bearing. Are there any standard industry or best practices things to which these designs are held?
Yes, there actually are. And when it comes to load-bearing bolts, bolts under torsion or tension, as the case may be, bolts under compression, parts under compression, the standard is actually quite specific as to how these have to be mounted and how the testing has to be done. It even goes so far to say, well, for example, we say, gee, an airplane is tested to a design G-load limit of plus 4 and minus 2, therefore it's strong. But the standard also says that the aileron hinges have to be tested, and it's to a different G-load standard. Stick forces have to be tested to a different G-load standard. So a lot of the specifics are carried through in the ASTM process that sees to it. It's not just the whole machine they're looking at, but every part and component so that you don't wear it out or don't bend it and have problems develop later on.
All right. I can't end this interview without throwing this bone to my friends in the gyroplane community. SLSA gyroplanes, is it ever going to happen?
Well, I've had the opportunity actually to talk to some of the folks in the Fort Worth Directorate, the Rotorcraft Directorate, and I must candidly admit that the reaction is hostile. They're not particularly excited about it. It is interesting to see that perhaps the Small Airplane Directorate out of Kansas City thinks differently on this. I think many listeners might not realize that the 9 different regions and the various directorates within the FAA operate with a high degree of autonomy. And where one might disagree with something, somebody else may give it a shot. So I'm hopeful that the preamble of the Sport Pilot Regulation, and that was that 600-page document that we all read and so thoroughly enjoyed, where it says, gosh, we would like to do helicopters and we would like to do gyroplanes, but we don't have enough history. I think maybe there's a move afoot to say, I'll tell you what, we got to give a couple of these a try so they can develop a history, and let's see if we can work it out. I'm hopeful that we may see some progress in this area.
Well, Ed, we really appreciate your taking a few minutes out to explain this process to our listeners.
Well, you're very welcome. Thanks for taking the time to come in and ask the questions. It can be a dull subject, but when you get into it, it's a mighty important one.
And Nate, I look forward to the next time I see you come in and wave hi bye at the PRA Chapter 2 meeting at Spanish Fork Airport.
Great, I'll see you there.
You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.